Okay, thank you, Rosh. You've got the numbers. We're going to take your phone calls this hour. Next hour, we'll take calls from those of you who have cancer. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Ty Bollinger with us, his book, Cancer, Step Outside the Box. Ty, give us a couple of these potent natural cancer treatments that you think are being suppressed.
Well, where do we start? One of them that's being suppressed is hemp. I'm not sure how familiar you are with hemp.
Oh, yeah, I am.
It's a fantastic treatment for cancer. Most people would be more familiar with the term marijuana, but that's kind of a slang for the hemp plant. But, I mean, hemp not only relieves pain and helps with appetite, but it also has been shown to have, curative properties with cancer. It's a superfood. You know, it's good for increasing alkalinity as well, but it's medicinal hemp was used in the United States up until the late 1930s.
Yeah, until Hearst decided that he wanted it was also used for paper products.
Uh-huh.
And he just wanted it to he owned all these forests that he wanted his wood to be used for paper.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And so they DuPont and Hearst teamed up and got hemp outlawed, and now it's thought of as, you know, the boogeyman drug, which when really it's very, very helpful for not only treating cancer, but it's a very healthy, it's a very widely used plant for making clothes, ropes. I mean, it's probably the most versatile plant in the world. But because of the fact that if, you know, folks want to smoke it, it alters their brain for a little while. It's illegal to even grow now.
Yeah.
But, you know, medicinal marijuana is legal in many states, and it's for a good reason. It really does help, especially because many cancer patients suffer from what's called cachexia, which is the wasting syndrome, where their body, they're nauseated and they can't eat and they're wasting away. Their body basically turns on itself and begins to digest them, for food. And so hemp, you know, when you use medicinal marijuana, it increases your appetite, and many, many cancer patients have been healed through using hemp. It's a great treatment, but it is being suppressed.
All right, what else?
We already talked about Laetrile. B17 has been widely suppressed. That's one treatment that's pretty popular among alternative realms, but it is being suppressed. There's one treatment that's got a promising future that's just kind of being noticed now, which it hasn't been suppressed yet, but I think it will be soon, is the hyperthermia, which is
these air chambers, right?
Yeah, there's different ways to induce hyperthermia, but basically what hyperthermia is superheating cells, and cancer cells are at temperatures, but I think between 41 and 45 Celsius, which is about 105 to 112 or 13 Fahrenheit, cancer cells are destructed. You know, they're destroyed when the body temperature is raised to that level. And so hyperthermia is an up and coming treatment that is getting a lot of play right now. And so that leads me to think that it will be suppressed soon. It'll be outlawed to use a hyperthermia type device to superheat the cells.
What do you think? I thought you were going to talk too about the hyperbaric oxygen.
Oh, hyperbaric oxygen chamber. Yeah. Oh no, that's definitely been suppressed. Yeah. As a matter of fact, there's still states where hyperbaric oxygen chambers are legal. There's some states that they're not, but there's states where they're still legal, but you can't talk about what they do.
I think, right? I'd go nuts in one of those tubes, though.
You know, it'd be difficult. It'd be very, very difficult for people that have claustrophobia. The hyperbaric, they're called HBOTs, HBOTs. Very, very effective at treating cancer. But it's funny, you can have these machines, but you can't tell about what they do.
Right.
It's kind of like this deal. I guess about a year ago, did you hear about the case of the Diamond Foods that were told to stop selling their walnuts?
No.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So just in case people are under the misguided interpretation or misguided notion that the FDA actually supports freedom of speech, I think it was early last year in 2010, the FDA sent a warning letter to the CEO of Diamond Foods, informing him that the packages that they were selling of walnuts were in violation of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. And you might say, well, how exactly were their walnuts violating the FDA standards? Well, they had the audacity to tell the truth about some of the health benefits of walnuts on their website. And when they told the health benefits of those walnuts on their website, somehow that food miraculously was transformed into a drug.
And
therefore, it was under the guidance of the FDA, and Diamond Foods was guilty of selling unapproved drugs. And so they had to take off all the research off their website about the health benefits of walnuts.
You've got a huge list of super supplements.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've studied all of them here, and they're just fantastic. You've got it all. The garlic, the probiotics. I've got Patricia Bragg coming on Sunday first hour to talk about apple cider vinegar.
Oh, it's great.
It's important. It's everything.
Yeah, you know, a couple years ago, my wife had some really bad joint pain. And she's having a hard time just, you know, with her knees, with her ankles, with her wrists. And did some research, and she began using apple cider vinegar with blackstrap molasses. And within a couple of days, all her joint pain was gone. It's amazing stuff. One supplement that I heard you talking about earlier on a commercial is Carnivora. Just amazing supplement. It's made from the Venus flytrap, actually.
Yeah, it's an immune booster, isn't it?
Oh yeah. It's a great immune booster, and it also stimulates, you know, your NK cells, your cells that fight cancer growth. So, fantastic supplement, Carnivora. As a matter of fact, I just got on there. I think yesterday or early today, and got a couple more bottles from your link there on your website.
Let's go to some of the calls, and I want to talk about pH and sodium bicarbonate.
Okay.
Let's go to Teresa, Long Island, New York. There you go, Teresa. Welcome to the program.
Oh, good morning. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call.
Of course. Sure.
I wanted to ask if you had done any research into, like, false positive results, people who are falsely told they have cancer. And the reason I'm asking this is this. I have a friend who was in the lab testing field for a very long career. They had gotten, you know, consistent number of positive and consistent negative results. At one point, they were given a quota by the government. The government came in and told them that they were expected to have a greater percentage of positive results. And the implication was that if you don't turn in higher numbers, you know, you're not doing things right, and we're going to, you know, you'll be threatened with closure. Well, this quota kept going up and up and up, but his research kept coming, or rather his testing kept coming up with the same, you know, number of positives and negatives that they always had. He doesn't know how, but he knows that his lab, the lab he worked for, stayed open because the numbers that they turned in kept meeting the quota, even though his work did not. So he can only assume that there were a lot of people who were told they were positive that they had cancer when they really didn't.
Jeez.
In order for the lab to stay open to meet this arbitrary government quota that kept rising and rising, you know, even though the quality of the testing never, you know, rose or anything. So that was very suspicious and very disgusting.
I haven't heard of that, Ty. Have you?
Yeah, I have. As a matter of fact, that's pretty commonplace, quotas. False positives are a huge problem, especially with breast cancer and prostate cancer. With breast cancer mammographies, if anybody has studied mammograms, knows that they turn up a huge amount of false positives. And as a result of false positives, oftentimes women have double mastectomies.
Oh, God.
I cannot count the number of emails that I have received over the last few years from women that have had double mastectomies. It turns out later they found out that they never even had cancer.
So what do you do about all these false positives? I mean, how do you know? If you can't get tested properly, how do you know?
You don't. Well, you can get tested properly, but most folks don't know what tests to do. Like, for instance, with breast cancer, I mean, mammograms cause cancer, by the way. I mean, that's been shown in numerous studies that mammograms...
You mean if you get a lot?
Yeah. Okay. Well, what do you mean by a lot? I mean...
Many mammograms as opposed to just one?
Right. Well, sure. I mean, because radiation has a cumulative effect in your body. So if you had one mammogram, your chances are a lot less of coming up with, you know, being diagnosed with cancer from that mammogram as opposed to, you know, if you've had 10 or 20. So, yeah, it's a cumulative effect, but the ionizing radiation from mammograms has been shown definitively to cause cancer. And I don't have the quotes in front of me here from the scientists that have done the studies, But the mammograms cause cancer. There's a much better alternative to mammograms. It's called thermography. And basically, you just
heat imaging, right?
Yeah, it's heat imaging. Yeah, and the heat that's given off from the cancerous tumors is easy to spot using advanced thermography. Doesn't cause any kind of damage, you know, radiation damage to the breast. It's much more accurate. It can detect breast tumors much earlier than mammography. But mammograms are endorsed by the medical establishment now. And so the false positives from mammograms are a huge problem. And as I mentioned, also prostate cancer with the PSA, right? Elevated PSA, you need to go get your prostate, you know, radiated or start on some chemo for your prostate cancer if you have elevated PSA. The problem with that is all PSA is a measure of inflammation in your prostate. It's not necessarily a measure of cancer in your prostate. And so we have men that are going getting chemotherapy and radiation on their prostate when we don't even know for sure they have prostate cancer. They just have an elevated PSA level, which the guy that invented the PSA test back in the 80s, and I cannot think of the doctor's name, has come out openly and said we should not be doing this PSA test to test for prostate cancer. It doesn't work. It doesn't definitively diagnose prostate cancer. All it does is show an elevated level of PSA in the prostate.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So the false positives are a big problem. There are better tests than what we currently use to diagnose cancer.
You know, the sodium bicarbonate procedure by that Italian doctor?
Yes. Tullio Simoncini.
It apparently works.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Simoncini is a doctor over in Rome, Italy, and he's got a pretty unique approach to treating cancer. He uses sodium bicarbonate, which to everyday Jane and Joe, which would include me, that's baking soda, right? Sodium bicarbonate is just baking soda, and it's an antacid, right? So what is an antacid? It neutralizes acids. It makes your system more alkaline, correct? And so what you were talking about earlier, George.
By the way, it's Dr. Richard Elbin.
Elbin?
Ablin.
Ablin.
He invented the prostate PSA test.
Yes, Ablin. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
There you go.
But back to bicarbonate, it's a great alkaline booster for your system. And as you had mentioned earlier, those folks that have very acidic bodies are cancer magnets. And if you can alkalize your system, you're going to improve the oxygenation of your cells, which oxygenation of cells has been definitively linked to cancer. Lack of oxygen at the cellular level, hypoxia, was linked to cancer back in 1932 by Dr. Otto Warburg, who won a Nobel Prize for it.
I think everybody should get pH test strips and test all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's cheap, inexpensive.
We take sodium bicarbonate every day. I take it, and my kids take it, too.
How do you take it?
I just put it in a glass of water and drink it. I take about a teaspoon. Mix it in water and drink it, and then the kids take about a quarter, half a teaspoon, mix it in water and drink about 8 ounces of water, just drink it down.
It's like Alka-Seltzer, isn't
it? Yep. That's great.
Let's go next. First-time caller, Billy, Salt Lake City, Utah. Go ahead, Billy.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Hey, I've got a question. Earlier you guys were talking about fluoride in the water. That's like a big concern with me.
Okay.
And I was basically wondering what the best way I could guarantee that I'm getting, you know, water without fluoridation. Another question is, does your guest know anything about whether or not water being bottled in plastic? I've heard some things about water, which is pretty much every bottled water, you know.
Sure is.
If the plastic has anything to do with any that could lead to any kind of health problems, such as, you know, cancers and things like that. But basically, I'm just looking for the best way to guarantee that I'm drinking water that does not have fluoride in it. So I was hoping you guys might be able to help me out with
that. Are there filters, Ty, that will get rid of fluoride totally? I don't think so. So can you buy bottled water without fluoride? I'm sure you can.
You can, but if you get a reverse osmosis filter, it will get out fluoride better than anything that's on the market today. And it may not get out 100%, but it can get pretty darn close. Reverse osmosis filter will get out fluoride.
And how does that work?
I'd have to look at the specs on the machine to see how it works. I don't understand the way reverse osmosis works, But I just know after reading the literature that that is what doctors recommend that are concerned about fluoride. They recommend reverse osmosis machines for getting out the fluoride.
Some people even recommend that you have a filter on your shower head because your skin absorbs that.
We have a whole house filter. We got a filter where the water comes into the house, and it filters so every spigot in the house is being filtered. So we get out the chlorine, the lead, the arsenic, the fluoride, everything through our filter. Now, a good filter is going to run you a lot of money. Ours would be about $7,500 for the filter that we have.
$7,500?
Yeah, it's an expensive filter. But, you know, if you folks that are out living in the country that are on a well, that's one way to get water without fluoride. But you want to get tested for other, you know, runoff residue, especially now that, you know, when you look at the aluminum that's been tested in the soil, in my opinion, because of the chemtrail spraying, you want to get your well water tested. But in regards to a second question concerning the bottled water, yeah, that the issue with bottled water and the plastic bottles is the BPA, the bisphenol A, and that does leach into the water. And bisphenol A is a toxic carcinogen and has been shown to cause numerous health problems. So it's almost there's not really a lot of good options with water at this point, because the whole house filters that filter out the fluoride are so expensive that a lot of people can't afford them. And then the bottled water is not a good choice because of the leaching in the plastic. If you can check online. I don't have the website handy, but you can. There's websites that you can see if your municipality filter or adds fluoride. At this point, I think it's close to 77% of the United States. Municipal water supplies fluoridate the water. So if you're in the lucky 23% that don't, then what you need is just a good filter, like a gravity filter for your water, like a big Berkey filter or a Berkey Lye. Those are what we use in our house before we had the whole house filter. And those will filter out everything but fluoride. So, and those are, you know, $150. So they're not overly expensive. So, you know, that's what I would recommend if you're in a municipality that does not fluoridate the water, is just to get a good gravity filter.
Let's go to Salem, Oregon. Hey, Marcia, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, so I was listening to the talk about the fluoride, and my son, he just started Head Start this past year, and I didn't know anything of it, but I mean, I didn't think anything bad of it until now, but they have people coming in and fluoriding our children's teeth.
Yeah, I went through that when I was in school, too. My parents jumped up and down and said, let's do this. This is great. And, they did it to me.
Well, it's bad. I shouldn't let them do that anymore.
Well, I'm not going to tell you what you should or should not do, other than, you know, fluoride is not the greatest thing in the world.
Well, yeah, it causes cancer. I mean, that sounds pretty bad.
Very bad. Go ahead, Ty.
Yeah, it's you know, I'll tell you what I would do. I wouldn't let them fluoridate my kid's mouth for sure. I wouldn't let them put fluoride.
Did you have to pay for that, Marcia?
Nope, it's a free thing that they come in, and they do it in every school that I can think of that I've heard of, and they start doing it right when they come into Head Start.
Wow, but you had to sign off on that though, right?
I do.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, in my opinion, one of the most ridiculous products you can find on the shelves of any supermarket.
Why do they even put it in the water then, Ty? I mean, who's making the money? Some big chemical company? What's going on here?
Well, let me kind of describe the way fluoridating the water came about. In the 20s, aluminum manufacturing.
Let's hold off on that until we come right back. That's a great story. Well, next hour, we'll take phone calls from cancer victims, cancer patients. Share with us what life has been like for you. We'll be back in a moment, though, with more of your calls with Ty Bollinger, author of Cancer Step Outside the Box on Coast to Coast AM. Ty, I'm getting lots of emails about fluoride. You devote a chapter to fluoride, and the last few calls have been about fluoride. How did this start? How did it get into the water?
Yeah, my website looks like it's been taken down tonight. And they're not putting it back up because it's about to crash their servers, they say. So anyway,
I'm sorry.
No big deal. No big deal. I'm gonna call him tomorrow and give him a little piece of my mind. But
anyway, these are the people who guaranteed you that your website, the servers, but the website would be okay.
Yeah, they guaranteed it.
And now we've pulled down the whole system.
It's not, but it's down. So anybody that, sorry about this, folks. If you want the signed book, just email me.
Aren't you on Amazon.com?
I'm on Amazon, but that's just the book. But it's not the signed offer. That's just Amazon will just ship you a copy. But if people want the signed book, they can just send me an email. Just Ty Bollinger, TYBOLLINGER, @gmail.com.
I love health books, and this is a good one.
Well, thank you, George. So people that want it, just send me an email, and I'll get to you tomorrow, and I'll send you links where you can purchase the signed copy.
It's got to be a happy, frustrating moment then for you.
Oh, it's good. You know, my goal is you know, if people want to buy the book, that's great to sell books. My goal is just to get the information out there, George, and this is helping get the information out there. You know, I've had a policy since I first published the book in 2006 that if people can't afford the book, I give it to them. And I never want to let money get in the way of getting this message out there. And so since I published the book in 2006 initially, it's on the fifth edition now, by the way, I've given away over 10,000 books to people that couldn't afford them. People just email me and say, hey, I can't afford it. I'm unemployed. I have cancer. And I say, no problem. Here's a book. So, you know, my goal is not to make money on this. But if people can afford $30, yeah, buy the book. But if you can't, I give it to you.
Well, good for you.
So anyway, back to fluoride. This is one of the most egregious examples of spin that you will ever hear. Okay, back in the 1920s. Aluminum manufacturing, due largely to the booming canning industry, was going rampant, right? Alcoa, anybody ever heard of Alcoa?
Oh, yeah, the aluminum company.
Right, right. And their biggest dilemma was how to cost-effectively dispose of the hazardous waste that was produced in the smokestacks, which was called sodium fluoride. Now, they had already been marketing their toxic fluoride waste as an insecticide and a rat poison, but they wanted a bigger market. Okay? Now,
it's like the old hole in a donut. Let's sell that too, right?
Yes, yes. Except the hole in a donut tastes better.
Yeah, much better.
But, okay, you got to, at this point, the U.S. Public Health Service was under the jurisdiction of Treasury Secretary Mellon, who just happened to be the founder and major stockholder of Alcoa.
Of course.
Okay? Now, in the 1930s.
Follow the money.
Follow the money trail. In the 1930s, Public Health Service dentist named Trendley Dean was dispatched to 345 towns in Texas where the water wells contained high concentrations of fluoride. What he found was shocking. Okay, teeth in high fluoride towns were often discolored and eroded, which is a condition that's called dental fluorosis. But he also appeared that they appeared to have fewer cavities than average. Okay. Now, to arrive at this conclusion, he handpicked 21 of the 345 communities. 21 of them, it appeared they had lower cavities, even though they all had fluorosis, which is discoloring of the teeth, brittle teeth.
That's the trade-out, right?
Yeah. The other 324, which he didn't include in the study, showed more cavities and fluorosis, but he threw them out. Okay. Okay, he later.
So if they, so the fluorosis they were getting from all kinds of sources, probably.
They were, yeah, well, without a doubt, fluoride causes dental fluorosis.
Is that all that causes fluorosis?
No, there's other factors that could have caused the fluorosis, but that's one factor. But the interesting thing about it is he chose the 21 communities for his sample that actually showed fewer cavities. The other 324 showed that these municipalities had more cavities, but he threw them out of the sample. Okay, he backed into his number. I'm an accountant. I know how to back into a number, George. Yeah, he backed into this number. He arrived at the conclusion that Alcoa wanted him to arrive at. Okay, in 1939, Alcoa-funded scientist named Gerald Cox declared that fluoride was good for your teeth, and he proposed that the USA should fluoridate its water supplies. Okay, and this was done by a scientist who was working for the largest producer of fluoride toxic waste in the USA, Alcoa, okay? But they had a major roadblock, okay? The Journal of the ADA in 1944 had warned that fluoridization of the water was dangerous for people's teeth and that the potential harm far outweighed the good, okay? The U.S. Atomic Energy Commission later censored that article because of national security reasons, okay? But later in 1947, Oscar Ewing, who was an Alcoa lawyer, who was in charge of the Public Health Service, began the National Water Fluoridation Campaign. Okay, and now, 65 years later, here we are.
It's everywhere.
77%.
San Diego just increased its fluoride level.
Yes. And here's something that's interesting.
If I were you folks down in San Diego listening to us on Kogo, I'd go nuts. I'd call everybody right now.
They just increased. Yeah, I was just listening to that today on Alex Jones was talking about San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
But Edwin Bernays was the one that was in charge of this campaign to sell this to the American public. Okay, he was a man that was his nickname was the father of spin. He wrote a book called Propaganda: How to Manipulate the Masses. He was Sigmund Freud's nephew, and he was the one that was in charge of the U.S. campaign to sell fluoride to the public. And so for 15 years, he basically said, you know, numerous studies have shown, research has proven, investigations have found, but he never really quoted any studies because there were none that showed fluoride was good for your teeth. And then if anybody doubted what he said, he just attacked their character, which is still, you know, the standard procedure today. And after 15 years, it was just a well-known fact that fluoride's good for your teeth, even though they couldn't cite any studies. And by the way, Bernays is the same guy that made popular the notion that smoking was good for women.
Next up, we go to Joseph, San Jose, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Thank you very much for taking my call, George.
Sure, Joseph. Thank you.
Ty, there is a documentary called Run from the Cure Using Cannabis. Do you know about that?
Yeah. Rick Simpson is the guy that, he had tremendous success with using hemp to treat cancer. Yeah, very good documentary.
Okay, that's perfect. Well, I just wanted the people to know. And, like, if they want to watch it, they can go to YouTube, and it's about an hour long.
Yeah, excellent documentary. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you, George, and thank you, Ty.
Thank you.
Okay, absolutely. Next up, we have Lewistown, Montana. Kirby's with us. Hi, Kirby.
Hi, George and Ty. Sorry about the website. Question. I have a dear friend who recently discovered that she has breast cancer at level 4. And I want to make sure that we can find a way to keep her alive. What would you recommend?
I'd recommend send me an email and I'll send her a copy of the book, and she can read the book and she can ask me questions. I'm not a doctor, so I can't recommend anything. I can't recommend treatments. I get in trouble if I try to do that on the air.
I bought 2 copies from Amazon, and I bought an electronic copy. I'm going to go print that up and take it into her tomorrow.
And have her email me with questions, and I'll be glad to help answer questions. I just can't recommend treatments on the air. It's too risky.
No, and it's tybollinger@vmail.com?
Yeah, tybollinger@gmail.com.
At Gmail.
Gmail.com.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I appreciate it.
Sure.
God bless.
Okay, we go to Cleveland now. Hey, Tim, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Ty.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi. My 2 things I wanted to ask about. I'm over 50, so I had the an examination for my prostate.
Okay.
And something you said doesn't ring correct. My doctor, they did that PSA test, and if it's a little high, he said that they have to do a biopsy before they order chemotherapy, first of all, to see if you actually have cancerous cells.
Yeah,
they don't just order the chemotherapy till they actually do the biopsy.
Yeah, you're right. They will do the biopsy, and a lot of times, here's the problem. Okay, most men over the age of 50 have cancer in their prostate. Most men, if they don't have it treated, will die from something other than cancer in their prostate. The problem is when you biopsy cancer, you spread it into the bloodstream, and it causes the cancer to metastasize. That's a real issue with prostate cancer that's biopsied, is because prostate cancer is rarely going to kill you unless it spreads, and it typically is not going to spread without a biopsy.
Then, you know, there are a lot of reporters out there who say that there's too much PSA testing going on out there.
Well, it's very lucrative. Very, very expensive test, very lucrative.
Huh. And again, we still go back to the founder of all of this, Richard Alblin, and you know, he says that it merely shows how much prostate antigen a man has in his blood
Yep.
And he said men with low readings still might harbor dangerous cancers. So it's not necessarily accurate either.
Right.
Next up, we go to John in Columbus, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, John. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Hey, pleasure talking to you guys. Hey, my dad in 1987 found out he had cancer. Anyway, it was in his bones, you know, it was pretty bad. But anyway, a buddy of mine came back from Canada. He called me quick as he got back, said, John, I got a cure for your dad. And, you know, I'm skeptical, you know. I got to reading the literature he had with it, homemade literature. Tried it on myself. He was in the hospital. They'd give up on him. Anyway, I'm diluted this stuff with, I think it was spring water or distilled water. And 3 days later, the oncologist came in and said, we don't know what happened, but, you know, the infection's gone, the swelling's gone down.
They were in shock, weren't they?
Mm. But anyway, this stuff is 35% hydrogen peroxide.
Yeah. Which is what you use to increase your alkaline level.
I don't know, but yeah. I take it twice a day.
Just a few drops, right, in water?
Right.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Food, it's got to be a certain grade, too.
It's food grade. 35%
food grade.
Food grade hydrogen peroxide.
Yeah. Okay. If you get it on your fingers, it'll turn them white and sting.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to dilute it. If you're taking food grade, yeah. You always dilute it.
Just how many drops do you put in there?
I go up to, you can, they say start at like 3 drops.
Okay.
And then you can gradually work your way up to, you know, sky's the limit, whatever you can handle.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, excellent treatment. Food grade hydrogen peroxide is a great alkalizer. It's it actually seeks out pathogens in your system and kills them. Very, very potent. But you got to be sure that you dilute it.
Do you believe that the pH level, if it's balanced, will minimize, maybe even totally? I can't let you make claims. But what does a balanced pH level do to you?
A balanced pH level. It makes your body operate the way it's supposed to. When your pH is not balanced, when you have a low pH, when you have an acidic internal terrain, your body is always fighting to buffer the acids, and it's leaching minerals out of your bones to buffer the acids, and it's also causing the cells. That have the low pH, because see, your blood can't have a low pH. If your blood has to stay about 7.2, or otherwise you die. And so when you ingest, you know, acidic foods, when you drink sodas that are very acidic, they have like a pH of 2. And the pH scale is a logarithmic scale, and so a pH of 7 versus a pH of 2, for instance. So water,
what a huge difference.
Water, yeah, water's at 7. A Coke, a soda is at a 2. It's not 5 times more acidic. It's 10 to the 5th times more acidic. It's 10,000 or 100,000 times more acidic. Okay, so it's exponentially more acidic than water. Your body is trying to buffer these acids, and the cells take the beating. Okay, the minerals and the oxygen from the cells go to buffer these acids, and that's what is one of the things that I was talking about earlier. Cells having a fundamentally different respiratory mechanism, that their respiratory mechanism changes from being aerobic to anaerobic, and they begin to ferment sugar. That is cancer. And so folks that are always eating acidic foods, that have an acidic terrain from drinking too many sodas, their bodies are always fighting to buffer these acids, and it causes their cells to be susceptible to cancer because of the fact that these cells are no longer being protected, because your body's fighting to keep your blood at a 7.2, so you don't die. And so then the cells are compromised.
All right, next up we go to Nashville. Hello, Denny, it's your turn.
Hi, good morning, George. Good
morning.
Morning, Denny.
My father-in-law was a retired Air Force colonel, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and all that. Very conservative guy. In 1992, he was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, which is a very aggressive form of cancer because it can metastasize very easily. It's carried in the blood. Well, he was very reluctant to try any kind of alternative therapies. My wife was a chiropractor. And anyway, after his first chemo treatment, when he was throwing up and couldn't eat and he started losing a lot of weight, his mind started to open up. So she started him on some EZSIACT, which is E-S-S-I-A-C-T, to cleanse his bloodstream after the chemos. And then she bought him a Rife waveform frequency generator that basically had two metal plates he set his feet on, and it came with a sheet that had all the frequencies for the types of cancer or illness. Well, he went back to his oncologist after about a month of that treatment, and his oncologist came in and said, I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it. And the next time he went, he was cancer-free, and he lived another 8 years and died of an aortic aneurysm at 85 years old.
Hmm.
That's pretty remarkable.
A great story. SEACT that you were talking about is in the book. And also the Rife, you know, we talked about Royal Rife earlier, the Rife generators. Both great treatments. The SEACT was actually formulated by a nurse up in Canada. She got it from the Indians up there. But her last name was Case, C-A-I-S-S-E. So if you spell that backwards, it's SEACT, and that's how they got the name of the T. Great treatment. But that I've been contacted by hundreds of people over the last few years that have used SEACT successfully.
Aspartame. What do you think?
Aspartame?
Yep.
Oh, that's great stuff. Great stuff.
Right.
No,
be careful.
Aspartame is an excitotoxin. It excites your brain cells to death. Is what aspartame does. The fraud that went into aspartame being legalized is close to the fraud that went into fluoride being legalized. Very, very toxic to your brain. Causes holes in your brain.
That was incredible FDA manipulation.
Well, it was basically manipulated by G.D. Searle, who was Donald Rumsfeld was the head of that company at the time that aspartame was made, was introduced to the public. But aspartame is made of three compounds. Okay, it's phenylalanine, aspartic acid, and methanol, which is wood alcohol. Okay, here is the important thing to know about aspartame: when the temperature of aspartame exceeds 86 degrees Fahrenheit, the methanol converts to formaldehyde, which is embalming fluid. Okay? So when you drink it, even if it's in the cold refrigerator and you pull it out and it's never heated above 86 degrees, when you drink it, it rises your body's temperature of 98.6 and it converts that methanol into formaldehyde in your body.
All right, Ty, stay with us. We're going to come back for a final hour. We'll still take general calls. Those of you who are on hold, don't worry. But I would like those of you who might be cancer victims, patients, check in with us when we come right back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And you can also email me at george@coasttocoastam.com.